welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. And Adam, I've got a big bag of Skittles for us to share after the... And we're going to eat all of them, aren't we?
Which...
All the Skittles? We're going to eat all of them?
How many poisoned are in it?
None. It's fresh.
All right,
I've never had them.
I'll risk it.
Try them. Honestly,
yeah.
I've never had them.
Let's risk it.
Yeah.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And, of course, you can listen to us anytime by downloading Open Sources, the podcast version from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today... We will talk about the end of Brangelina. No, we won't.
Somebody asked me that. They said, are you going to talk about that? I said, yeah, probably for about like 5 seconds. So,
well, there we go.
There you go. It's over.
We have more serious stuff to talk about, like torture. And I don't mean the torture of Brangelina breaking up. Specifically, Canada's torture history. The CBC has uncovered a great many documents about how Canada conspired to pick up three guys in Damascus and basically torture them till they admitted to committing trumped-up charges. So is the government ignoring this particularly ugly piece of Canada's foreign affairs? And then south of the border, First Nations people in North Dakota are fighting to stop an oil pipeline passing through their land, and they have made some headway as the Obama administration has brought construction to a temporary halt. So we will ask, is there any hope here for Canadians looking to stop our own pipelines? And do the Standing Rock Sioux have hope of stopping any further progress in pipeline construction? And finally, we will talk about civility in the House, or lack thereof. Eric Grenier looked at how many times that Speaker Jeff Reagan has chastised MPs for heckling. And of course, this is a discussion that's been had before, but there might be a chance that this time Reagan might make an impact. We doubt it, but we'll talk about it just the same. But first,
shut up, you bum. See there.
But first, speaking of the House of Commons, it was back in session this week, and there's a lot to talk about. Summer seems to have taken the sheen off as people are looking to the fall. 1 year since the Trudeau government has taken office, and a lot of people now have high expectations that stuff is going to get done. Although, if you were watching or following up on a press conference that Trudeau had at the National Press Gallery on Wednesday, and Aaron Weary of the CBC was, and he seemed remarkably unimpressed that the Prime Minister is still using kind of generalized talking points when there are so many immediate specific issues on the table.
Yeah, he's very good at that, the sort of expounding and just on a theme rather than any concrete stuff. I think that might be his main skill other than how to take a selfie. But that's, you know, that's a little bit of a shot. But
burn.
It's true, though. I mean, it is true. And I guess that's going to slow down once everybody's iPhones are full of pictures.
Once everybody has a selfie.
Yeah, it's not going to matter anymore, but it's still a thing, and that's his thing, whatever. But interesting kickoff to the week. What caught my attention was the whole discussion about the peacekeeper deployment, mm-hmm. and how the Conservatives are saying, "Oh, well, you're just doing this so you can get a seat at the UN Security Council." Do you remember when the Conservatives were trying really hard to get a seat at the Security Council and giving everybody maple syrup and playing nice?
No, that was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, but of course it was. But they were still trying really hard, even though they were the only people voting against certain bits of legislation, and be like, oh yeah, and the U.S., Canada, and Israel voted no, which was the usual arrangement. So it's kind of funny hearing that coming from Rona Ambrose, using the peacekeepers as pawns, as she said, because and there is some truth to it, though, in that I don't think they have made a clear case. It's like, we're going to send peacekeepers.
Well,
we're
going to
send them somewhere.
Them.
Yeah. They're going to do some stuff because Canada, we're back. You need something a little more specific. There's lots of opportunities for peacekeeping on this planet. And I personally think it's a good thing that the peacekeepers are back. But yeah, you probably need something a bit more concrete than, yep, they're back and we're going to do a thing. And platitudes. You know, it needs more. There needs to be more beef. And I think a lot of people are waiting for the beef.
Well, we know that the beef's going to be going back to China, because that is actually at least one piece of progress from recent dealings. If you didn't know, the Chinese premier, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, it's Li Keqiang. Lee Kwang.
Apologies to the Premier of China, but I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I wasn't even sure who it was.
We're definitely not going to get a visa now.
No.
But he was in Ottawa. I guess he was returning the favor from when Trudeau was in China at the beginning of the month. Mm-hmm. And they there's a deal today where Canada will get to keep exporting canola to China, which is a big market for canola, especially in a time when I was not aware of this. There's an excess of canola on the international markets, so this is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I'm sure China would take it all.
And China is also going to start accepting bone-in beef from Canada again.
Because when did they cut that off again?
That was after
shovel and shut up.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
it's a long time.
Yeah, so we're going back to 03. So that's not small potatoes. So there is the beef. Yeah, the irksome thing is when he comes back to the platitudes, and you know, when you're in front of the UN General Assembly and you say Canada is here to help. Okay, that's fine because you're making a general speech against to the UN General Assembly. When you come back home though, and somebody says to you point blank, where are we going to be sending our peacekeepers? And you're like, just chill, man. We're just going to be sending peacekeepers out. You know,
it's all good. We're back. Yeah. Oh, we sit at the same time. Snap. There you go. It's true, but though. That's the attitude. It's like, so you got some surf guy.
You know, it is very Owen Wilson-like.
It's all right.
Yeah. We do have Prime Minister Owen Wilson sometimes, it feels like. This was announced months and months ago that we're going to be sending peacekeepers somewhere. So one would think we would now have a general idea. Like, give us a continent. There are six continents.
I heard Africa
name
came
one.
Up, but
yeah. And
that's the easy one to say, oh, yeah, Africa.
There's and the more one. They're like, we're just trying to figure stuff out, the more it does look like a stunt.
We're just trying to,
you know.
We've never had diplomacy and stuff like that before. No.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It's like when Schwarzenegger used to always end with, and things of this nature. You know, you kind of just expect, we're going to do this and that and things of this nature. That's, well... It's not as simplified as that, I guess. Yes, everything's nice and happy now, but...
But no, it's...
Where's the beef? Yeah.
Yeah, we need to start knowing things. And that's where I think he's going to get in trouble. And in Robert Fife, who's the Globe and Mail's politics editor, I don't know his job title, but he used to be on CTV, but now he works for the Globe.
He's good. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, he is good. No doubt.
Yeah.
But he said basically, you know, Trudeau has a tremendous amount of political capital, but he's going to have to start spending it. Right now, for every one person that thinks Trudeau's doing a terrible job, there is 2.5 people who think he's doing a great job. And you know what? I hate to tell this to Trudeau, but it's not going to get too much better than that. So there comes a point where you just have to stop thinking about the image and start thinking about start putting forth the details. Because, yeah, people are going to hate you no matter what decision you make, but you have to make a decision. It's so weird. I was watching at work. I wasn't watching it at work, but I had it on at work, the Parks and Rec season 4. And it was season 5. And it was after Leslie Knope gets elected. City council, and her first thing is like she tries to introduce the sugar tax, and half the people are like, if you introduce this, you're going to kill jobs and we're going to recall you. And then everyone's like, no, you have to pass this. And she's unsure. And it kind of seems like Justin Trudeau's in that phase right now where he's like, he wants everyone to love him.
But Ron Swanson is waiting around the corner.
Right? He needs a Ron Swanson.
Does that mean anything to anybody? Let us know if it does or doesn't. But Ron Swanson is my favorite. Because there's a lot of tough stuff coming down the pipe. One of which is the Kinder Morgan pipeline.
Yeah.
I'm working on my segues. Ha. You know, economy's kind of stagnant.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really picked up at all. We've got to put a price on carbon. Lots of humming and a hawing about that. Liquid natural gas terminal that's going to be lots of consternation about that out west as well. Mm-hmm. Health accords with the provinces. There is a lot on the platter. There's plenty on the plate. So, and those, well, were sort of almost off the top of my head, but I mean, that's not all. Oh, and the Senate too. Senate has also reconvened. Electoral reform and Senate reform are both very, very hot issues. Mm-hmm. The Senate has 20 vacancies. Mm-hmm. When are they going to be filled? The answer is soon. Well, like, what does that mean? You know, When are we going to go to Mars? Soon, right? Like,
I expect we'll have a full Senate before we go. Anyone goes to Mars. Remember, maybe. there was that application process, which I believe closed in June. Choosing senators is kind of the easy stuff. The harder stuff is going to be this carbon pricing thing, where you basically have the liberals saying, we're going to keep the conservative figures and we're going to meet those. And understandably so, people are saying, well, that's not really what you promised.
That's true. We're going to change that up. We're going to change up Bill C-51. We're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it this way. But a lot of it seems like status quo.
Boozman said about 51 from at least a liberal politician since.
It's just we're getting, in my view, the same thing with just happier faces, right? Pretty much.
Yeah.
So you say about, you know, the countries that had said no to the Soviet style, it's like, well, we want socialism with a happy face. We're getting like neoliberalism with a happy face, right? It's like sunshine, lollipops.
Well, it's also nice to see the National Press Gallery get regular use again.
There's that. I mean, it's not all negative. I mean, you can sit here and beat on them as much as we like, but it's, you know, and there has been a change. Has it been a sea change? Not really. It's sort of like, I think things that were kind of cut off in the 10 years of the Harper years have just been reintroduced, and it's things we, you know, expect anyway. You know, so we took this away and we're just going to put it back. It's not something new. You know, it's not, these aren't new things. It's like we're sort of getting back to the level we were at before. Then we got to take it beyond that and say, okay, so when are you going to kick up the game, Junior?
True. Yeah, but so having said that, you know, 10 years is a long time. You know, if you think people who weren't able to vote in the 2006 election, the first one to install Harper. You know, if you were 17 that year, people are 27 now. Yeah. So it's
the millennials are like, I don't know.
It's a little bit different. And when you kind of see it through that lens, you might appreciate the awesomeness of the good vibrations that the Trudeau government offers. However, I mean, I definitely felt that at first as well. But I mean, for a while now, I realized he was probably working a lot during the summer too. Mm-hmm. But there was a feeling that everyone was kind of off this summer, and it was like summer vacation time. And I do know rationally,
12 weeks. We're off for 12 weeks.
Yeah, and I know rationally hard, stuff was getting done and announcements were being made. I forgot to write it down, but there was somebody wrote down. Or wrote an article about how much money the government gave away this summer, and it was like in the billions.
18? No. I should know this. I think I was the one that wrote it down. $8 billion.
Yeah.
In novelty checks.
Right.
Yeah.
And so,
drunken sailors, somebody called, you know, the usual. It's double or treble what the conservatives spent at the same time.
Well, true, but I mean, at the same time, there's a lot of... a lot of stuff that needs to get done. And if you think about, you know, one announcement made here in Guelph, the seniors' residence, that's partially federal money.
Yeah, and to sort of switch to local, putting the seniors' residence up on top of the hill there, to me, doesn't seem like the best idea. I suppose we could talk about that at a future date, but if you know the geography of the area, it's like, why, you know, nobody's going to be walking anywhere that lives up there.
Yeah, it's downhill. Nobody. Every way
toboggans
you go.
Maybe, and then a little lift to take people back up. But that's,
it's true. I hadn't
totally
thought of
nothing
that.
To do with problem of hell. But it was like they're gonna put it up there. Anyway.
Yeah, that's very true. I wish we had thought of that last week.
Yes, but anyway, we'll ice that, and next time we do Guelph stuff, we'll talk about it. Matt.
But yeah, the thing that gets me is that FICO quote about having to spend political capital. It's got to be spent. And the question is, are you going to let it sort of trickle away through atrophy, which is kind of what's going to happen if you like keep staying the course and, you know, and not be bold in any of these directions you want to go in if you're just kind of, you know, trying to keep it cool? Or are you going to actually spend it to get stuff done? I mean, we saw that kind of in south of the border when Obama was elected. He was trying to keep it, you know, cool for the first year, but then he spent that political capital getting mm-hmm. Obamacare passed, which was huge. So, you know, do you want to be like Obama, or do you want to get one big thing done, or do you want to like just keep milling about and, you know, maybe you get these trade agreements with China passed, maybe you get little things done here and there, you're giving out the checks, or do you want to be remembered for something rather than just being the first son of a prime minister to be prime minister? And I think that's going to be a big question Trudeau will need to answer for himself through his actions this fall.
Yeah, and also I think it depends on the up-and-comers are in the other two parties, two major parties, as to who the leadership is going to be. And that may change the dynamic once we find out who the permanent new hires are for the top jobs of the Conservatives and the NDP.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that is, I mean, that's a big piece of this puzzle, because Trudeau can skate right now, because he knows in 2019 he's not going to be facing Mulcair and he's not going to be facing Ambrose. Who knows who he's going to be facing on the NDP side? There's still the one person running for the NDP.
Yeah.
And as for the Conservative side, it's like there's nobody anybody's kind of getting excited about. No disrespect to those people who are running for the Conservative leadership, because there are five of them so far. But
I'm so excited.
Yeah. But it's, you know, there's no kind of I was going to say serious opposition, but there is serious opposition.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, he's facing two people who he's not going to be worried about in 2019.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Oh, and I should mention the at least two, maybe more by-elections, right? Did you see any of Jason Kenney's, was it today, step down? Yesterday? Jason Kenney's is toast and he's...
Yes. There is, I know there's two seats open.
Did a little soft shoe.
And I think, yeah, I think his seat, Elections Canada sent out the announcement that his seat was officially open. I think it was today.
Hmm.
I had to double check, but yeah, I think
that's how excited we were about the whole thing. Or me,
so
anyway.
There's three seats open now, including, Stephen Harper's Calgary Heritage seat. And, those will be, filled in due course. And I mean, it's not going to affect the government lineup anyway. We're not going to suddenly get a minority government, but.
But I think some of the contenders might need seats.
Yes.
If you know what I'm saying.
Oh, excellent point.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move on to the situation involving Canada's record on torture. There are three men, three Muslim men who are Canadian citizens. They were abroad, weirdly enough, in Syria. This was shortly after 9/11 in 2002. They went to Syria, where they were mysteriously picked up, taken to mysterious locations where they were, let's just say, quote unquote, interrogated, and forced to admit to things that they had no plan or inclination to do because they were tortured. And to what they've been since that time, these three men have launched a lawsuit against the government, $100 million apiece, and
I thought it was total. Wow, that's
no, it's $100 million each, mm-hmm. and I double checked that,
yeah,
because I thought it was $100 million together as well. But the interesting thing about the situation, because this has been in the courts for a while, at least in the system for a while, we haven't heard too much about it, but CBC went to the trouble of digging up the documents concerning how they were detained, when they were detained, what happened to them, and the various things they tried to accuse these people of. And it's a pretty frightening revelation, especially when the Prime Minister is going to the UN saying, we're here to help, and it makes you wonder, help who, when, where?
Yeah, I mean, the original, it was the Iacobucci inquiry in 2008 had said that it didn't implicate, at least not then, that the RCMP and CSIS were involved.
Mm-hmm.
It said they were kind of indirectly involved in what happened. Obviously, the story has changed all these years later. And it's, so this, it isn't new. Obviously, the lawsuit is new news, but this, it sounds like, you know, in the post 9/11 days when everybody was kind of things were up in the air, and
mm-hmm.
you know, in a lot of ways, and I'm not saying that this is right, obviously, that people's human rights were suspended. And if you're remotely linked, if you'd even made a phone call to anybody that was suspect,
mm-hmm.
There's a connection to Ahmed Khadr, who is Omar Khadr's father. He ran that in quotes charity in Afghanistan, which was pretty much a front for. for Al-Qaeda. And al-Maliki was somehow connected to that. He had some sort of association with that. It's vague. There's no evidence that he ever did anything wrong and got scooped up. I guess he was going to see his grandma, something, you know, family, like his grandma in Damascus.
His grandma was sick.
So
he's going to see his sick granny.
Same with the other two. They were just traveling, and it's like, okay, Syria gets tipped off, and Egypt was one too. They ended up in Egypt. Somebody ended up in Egypt as well. Okay, get these guys. It's torture by proxy, right? Because they knew back then, they've known for years that Syria does this, Egypt does this, lots of other countries do not hesitate to just start torturing people to get information. Couple that with, you may remember back in the day, Vic Taves. Remember Vic Taves?
There's a name.
He's, history now. I think he's living with the babysitter now, but that's another story.
The babysitter.
It must be. And the baby that they had together. But that, again, is a completely other story. Saying that back in the day that it was, okay, you know, if we gain any information, I think it was 2012, if we get any information that's obtained by torture, if it's going to be help with the personal safety of Canadians, it's okay. It's admissible.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if, you know, we don't condone torture, but, you know, if it happens, well, we'll use this information. So there's a little bit of loosey-goosey going on there, right? It's either like either your country condemns torture completely as a means of getting information out of people, or they don't. There's no gray area. So this, you know, in terms of being complacent with this, it sounds like it. I haven't really been following the CBC story with the redacted documents. It's usually just a black sheet and it'll have like one piece of info. It's a lot of work to go through it. And it is paper. They don't give it to you in a digital file, right?
No.
They give you sheets of paper. It's so
that's
old
been
school.
Photocopied, so you can't like hold it up to the light or anything.
So it's very old fashioned. And is it Terrence McKenna working on it?
I believe
Did
so.
Did you see it? Yeah. So
it's a Fifth Estate report that's going to appear this weekend.
It'll be interesting to see, and I'm sure they'll find some dirt. Because it sounds like there was somebody in these reports that's, you know, they're like, well, we don't really have anything on this guy.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's the kind of thing that will slip through.
Well, it's a reminder of just how over the top it was in the weeks and months after 9/11. I mean, one of the men, I don't want to butcher the name, but I think it was Ahmed Al-Mahdi was a driver, and he was stopped at the border because he had this map, this photocopied map on him with all these locations of government buildings in downtown Ottawa, and it's something they gave all the drivers so they can navigate their way around
You come to
downtown
UG,
Ottawa.
They give you a map with all the buildings on it, right?
Right. And so they're like, this is suspicious. Why do you have all these government buildings on this map? And it's just like, well, Ottawa's a company town, and that company is the federal government. You want to know where stuff is, right?
Yeah.
But
it's
because,
not easy to navigate.
But because
Ottawa,
his name was Ahmed Al-Mahdi instead of Steve Jones, it was suspicious.
And driving while brown,
Yeah, and the same thing with al-Maliki, who had a successful electronics business. And it's like, whoa, well, what kind of Muslim is involved in electronics? Bomb maker. That seems pretty pretty loose. And then on top of it all, before he was picked up in Syria, again, on the way to visit his sick granny, so they picked up, you know, the Muslim born the Canadian born Muslim man equivalent of, you know, Red Riding Hood on his way to visit his sick granny. They surveilled him for 2 weeks and they came up empty. So it's like, you know, you can't just go around picking up people on the assumption that they're doing something wrong. I know some people in the United States think you should.
Yeah,
but it's still against the rule of law. And I think it's just one of those reminders, like all those people who got swept up in like the dragnet right after 9/11. It's like,
and
you're
like
a Muslim, you're
Guantanamo.
A male.
Yeah.
You've done it. You've done something that even looks suspicious or could be considered suspicious. We're not going to take any chance or just drag you up and take you somewhere and interrogate you.
And this always happens in a state of war. Believe me, I'm not saying that it's right, but it goes back to the internment camps that we had in Canada, or you know, you name it. That is the reaction and the overreaction because you know it's proven they had nothing on these three men at all. They're not a stitch, other than the fact, like you say, that their names fit a certain profile, that their visuals fit a certain profile, and they visit certain questionable countries. When were we on the train? We took the train to New York. There was a woman beside us who was yeah, as Canadian as could be. But, and we overheard the discussion because she was right beside us. She was single, but she was born in Afghanistan. And I'm telling you, they took her off the train and we didn't see her again. Now, I don't think they, you know.
She didn't end up in Guantanamo.
She didn't end up in Guantanamo or the Niagara River, but it was odd that she was removed and then she didn't come back. So it's like, well, what happened, right? Yeah. So the and that wasn't long after 9/11. So it's still, you know, this would the American Border Police, I don't think they've geared it down that much since those days, depending on where you're crossing and what your passport says.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah.
Or what your name is or the color of your skin. And I will stick to that because it's absolutely true.
So. Sure. Steve Jones still isn't, you know, isn't getting pulled out of line, but Ahmed Al-Mahdi,
still single man.
Yeah.
Got a prayer rug beside him, maybe. You're done.
Yeah.
And
the disturbing part of, well, it, that's not the disturbing part, but the political part of this is the Vic Tay's order. I didn't know this that until CBC reported that this order is still in place. I mean, they sort of peeled it back a little in 2010. It's like, okay, CSIS only is going to be able to act on this stuff. But it's still in effect. And this isn't an act of parliament. So this was an act by the public safety minister.
Yes, which
so it could be taken back today. Ralph Goodale can sign a thing that says, no, we're not going to do this anymore. I rescind what Vic Tay said in 2009. And I know a lot of people are concerned about C-51, understandably so, but if they wanted to start dealing with this, with the issues of that have come out around this, like with terrorism and counterterrorism and security and rule of law, signing a piece of paper, like he could write it on a cocktail napkin and get it done right now, wherever he is having dinner right now.
Yep.
It could be done. And it's a little scary to me. You know, on the, you know, the falling domino theory, you know, which I don't fully subscribe to. But still, it just, you know, something this simple, it doesn't require an act of parliament. It just requires Ralph Goodale's signature today.
Well, this is the thing, like we were talking about in the first quarter there about Bill C-51 briefly, that the Liberals and Trudeau voted for it when it was passed. And on the condition, their condition, they said, well, you know, once in power, which has happened.
Yeah,
that they would change it. They would soften it, you know, on or past election day. You know, they always do this all within 100 days of election. But, you know, cue the crickets. Nothing's – it's not on the plate yet.
No.
And needs to be. So they're going to take a – you know, it's usually economy goes to the top. And then you would hope at some point in their mandate that they would take care of it. It would come back. I don't know what it's going to take. It may take this coming to a head in the courts. And these, you know, I don't think they're going to get $100 million each, but they have a strong case, like Mayor Arar.
Well, Arar got $10.5 million.
Yeah, but again, circumstances are essentially the same, right? Yeah. So, you know, they probably have a really good case, unless some of the redacted stuff actually says, well, no, in actual fact, they did this. But even so, blatant violation of these guys' rights.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a... I wouldn't say rock solid case, but it's pretty tight. Pretty tight.
Yeah. And time is also getting tight for us, so we have to take a commercial break and a musical break. But we'll be back in a couple of minutes. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
CFRU.
If you're wondering what my kind of music was, that is it. That is new to the station, is the 427s. God, talk about a localish name. From their new album, Mavericks, in stereo fidelity, that was called The Score. The Mavericks, just out.
The Score.
Try, or not The Mavericks. Mavericks is the album. The band is 427s. Check out the427s.com for more info on that new and up-and-coming surf band that's taking the charts by storm here on CFLU 93.3 FM.
It makes you wonder if they live in the vicinity of the 427. Where do they surf?
Etobicoke.
Yeah.
You can surf in Lake Ontario sometimes.
Right.
That's true.
Just before we go back into the news, I just want to draw people's attention. There's a lot of events, politically related events coming up. Starting tonight, Take Back the Night is tonight. I believe for you students who are listening within the sound of my voice, they are gathering at Johnson Hall right now. But the actual march begins at 6 p.m. at Marianne's Park. That is just down at the bottom of Gordon Hill by the river. For you readers out there, there's a book called Conflict and Compromise, and it is about Guelph and planning issues between 2000 and 2015. It is written by a former U of G professor named Fred Doms, and he will be officially launching that book on Tuesday at the E-Bar at 7 p.m. So he will be engaging with, I believe, former Mayor Karen Farbridge, as well as former City Councilor Ian Finley, and they'll be talking about all the issues brought up in that book. If you want to get a jump start, you can go down to the bookshelf and get it now. It is called Conflict and Compromise. If that isn't your cup of tea, Jean-Pierre Kingsley, former Chief Electoral Officer of Canada, will be at WarMem on Tuesday at 7 p.m., and it will be what's promised by Fair Vote Canada to be a lively Q&A. Their words. And if you're interested in electoral reform, that is a good person to get information from. But if you can't make it on Tuesday, and you can make it up to Kitchener, he will be at the Kitchener Library on Wednesday at 7 p.m., also talking about electoral reform. And then finally, there's a Ward 1 town hall on Wednesday at City Hall. Councillors Dan Gibson, friend of the show, and Bob Bell, who we're hoping to make a friend of the show, will be in there in person to answer your questions. You don't have to be a Ward 1 resident to go, because they'll be talking about budget and engagement over the budget and things like that. So that is your political week coming up. Take Back the Night tonight, Conflict and Compromise, and Jean-Pierre Kingsley on Tuesday, and the Ward 1 Town Hall on Wednesday. I do have posts about all of this on Guelph Politico if you have forgotten any of those details, and I was talking too fast for you to write it all down. You can find it on Politico.
Action-packed.
It is action-packed.
September,
it's
October
crazy.
Is always a blowout in this town. So.
Absolutely. This is a bad segue, but the one place they're not hoping for a blowout.
Oh, where's the applause button? That's beautiful.
Is North Dakota in the area of the Sioux Nation there, the Standing Rock Sioux Nation. They are protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline, and it is a 1,134-mile-long pipeline that will carry, once constructed, if constructed, 570,000 barrels of crude oil per day through the Dakotas to Illinois, where it would be then refined and then shipped off other places. So understandably, the people of Standing Rock Sioux are trying to shut this down. They do not want an oil pipeline going through their sacred lands, their precious water sources. And they have received some success. The Obama administration kind of went over the head of the local judge. The local judge said that the pipeline could continue construction, but the Obama administration and its various tertiaries came in and said, no, we have to stop in order to review this. And it has given some hope, I think, to people who are looking to pipeline situations here, saying, you know what, there is some success. And I was actually reading an article that said this is kind of the new wave of oil protests, because, you know, we've had environmentalists for years going against Keystone and Kinder Morgan and all these pipelines. But it seems to be that the local route going through First Nations with legitimate long-term treaty concerns and people running roughshod over those, that perhaps may be the way for the environmentalists to start winning on this issue.
Yeah, these situations always start off with a stalemate these days because they're saying, you know, the Sioux are saying that they were never consulted with, and that's why they're stopping the process, or trying to at least. But then, of course, one of the legal consultants, with legal advisors for the people in charge of the project, I think it's Enbridge is one of them. It's a joint project. They're saying, well,
Energy Transfer Partners,
that the tribe boycotted the consultation process and never came to the table. So what, you know, what? It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's going to come to a head. What I thought was interesting, the picture making the rounds on Facebook, which was actually of, I think it was Woodstock 99, became, look at all the protests. Now, there are quite a few protesters there, but it became all about this meme, and, you know, this is the age of the meme, but there's lots of serious things going on the ground, including friend of the station, Amy Goodman, an arrest warrant was put out for her. She was charged with criminal trespass because she was the one, and her team from Democracy Now! Took the footage of the security dogs with the bloodied mouths, and you can actually hear in the video saying that dog's got blood in its mouth. This is private security, and this is where it gets all weird. Not all weird, but all of the parties involved. You got a private security firm, public lands, and also I didn't know this about the Army Corps of Engineers are building the pipe. This wouldn't happen in Canada. We'd be contracted out because we don't have the capacity. But the Army Corps of Engineers take care of things that are considered, I guess you'd say, in the national interest. And the Standing Rock Sioux haven't had much luck with the Army Corps of Engineers because in the 60s, they built a lot. They dammed something to the effect of 200,000 acres. And a lot of people who were displaced in that were never actually, you know, there's been no reparations made for the land that was taken in that flood. So, you know,
let's say American First Nations haven't had a lot of good experiences with the military.
No. And you know, you would expect in this day and age things to improve. Obviously not. But, you know, this is a prime example. And it wasn't just before airtime, but earlier today I saw that one of the, I guess it was the chair of the Standing Rock Sioux, was at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva speaking against this. So it's all not all coming to a head, but there's lots of things happening. He's there saying, look, this is our land. This is our, what's left of our land.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if anything will come of that too, because it's one of those, you go to Geneva and it's like, well, shrug. I'm not saying that that's what should happen, but that's generally what happens with these things. It's very good optics, but does it change anything? That remains to be seen.
Unfortunately, that's true. It is all optics, because I think the people they are trying to protest against are not the people who are going to be very receptive to UN UN opinion on this situation. We're talking about a very sovereignist part of the United States, and North Dakota is one of those places in the states where they're seeing oil and natural gas as their next big industry. Coal is dying despite, things Cheeto Jesus is saying. But oil and natural gas is still viable in the current economic climate and the current energy environment. So, the First Nations people there are being portrayed in a way that's anti-business, anti-progress, as sort of they always have when they're trying to stand up for their rights, when people want to take their land and do whatever with it. And so ultimately anything in terms of UN support is probably going to fall on deaf ears and not going to be very helpful. What is going to be interesting to watch is what happens with this government intervention on the part of the U.S. government. If this continues, are we going to see other pipeline ventures come before the administration and saying, well, you shut that down. Why can't you shut this down? Or you put a hold on this as we go back and try to work this out. I'm fairly cynical for these things where these things are concerned. So I have no doubt that we're going to run roughshod over the Native Americans and continue to build the pipeline. However, I am kind of impressed that there was this pause. There was, you know, despite the implications of it, that there seems to be at least some element in the U.S. government that's saying, you know what, maybe we've been kicking around the Aboriginal people for, you know, the better part of 400 years. Maybe it's time to reconsider. Maybe we don't lose anything in just taking a minute and seeing if we can work things out. On the other hand, you have North Dakota saying that they're losing in the meantime. They've asked for $6 million in... to cover the cost for all these National Guard troops that they have in the area. And this is like security expenditures already undertaken. And there has been a lot. As you know, when you see the images of, you know, protesters being arrested, it's been almost $2 million they've spent so far. So they're actually anticipating, you know, more trouble in the future. This has actually been going on since April. And it's kind of finally trickled up to the mainstream level in terms of media attention. But yeah, they are anticipating that this is going to be a much longer fight, which I think bodes well for the cause. Mm-hmm. I'm still doubtful about the result, though. But I think for the cause, I mean, sometimes these things happen incrementally, and that's just the way it is. Progress is slow, but we'll see what happens.
Well, and it sounds like there are other paths that they could have taken, but of course, in the name of expense,
yeah,
and however it was laid out, they didn't do that. Now, of course, the companies are doing their promotion of it is that they're playing up domestic productions. Like, well, we need domestic oil because we don't want oil from those. They're implying it. They're not directly saying it, but they don't want oil from those bad Middle Eastern people who do terrible things. That's the implication of domestic oil equals we don't want it from parties we don't like.
Exactly.
Russia, you name it. Right. Now, and also they're saying that, well, what do you want? Do you want more trucks on the road with oil on them? Do you want more trains? They didn't actually mention Lac Mégantic, but there's a prime example.
Sort of implied when you're talking about trains now.
Yeah. You say, oh, do you want these trains on here? As far as they're concerned, the oil has to get to market. And they always say light, sweet crude as if it's something you just take a glass of and drink. I was like, oh, I dig that light, sweet crude.
You want to put it in your coffee.
Yeah,
in the morning.
It's not that heavy tar sand stuff that the Canadians are lugging. And but then, of course, groups like the Sioux and environmentalists just point to say, well, there's a spill here and a spill there in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and this and that. And it's like, can you build a damn pipeline, Army Corps of Engineers, that won't leak?
Yeah.
Because I think if that was the case, we probably wouldn't even be having this discussion. If a pipeline was an ironclad thing within reason, then they could say, oh, no, please don't put it within however many meters of our water supply or lake because the damn things keep leaking.
Right.
You wouldn't have this problem, right? It's like I was talking to somebody about this. I said, you know, they can take a little robot and put it on an asteroid and it can call home, but they can't build a pipeline that won't, you know, leak into somebody's drinking water. So they need to work on that. It would save everybody a lot of pain.
I would add that they thought of everything but how the robot would bounce once it hit on the asteroid. But
yes, it did call home eventually.
I believe it got stuck under a crevasse and died after 3 days. But having said that, I mean, that is essentially correct.
It's our sci-fi spin on things.
We at least got it to the asteroid.
Yes. It's pretty impressive, right?
Right. And I mean, the mathematical know-how-ness to do that is impressive. But I mean,
but the odds of a pipeline leaking mathematically seem to be 100%.
Yes.
It's like they all leak.
And I mean, the length of this, I mean, we always seem to be talking about pipeline lengths in the thousands of miles. We don't seem to ever seem to be talking about pipeline lengths in like the dozens of miles.
10 miles.
It's 10 mile
pipeline.
I mean, and all you can think of is like, you know, can you monitor 1,100 miles of pipeline?
Sure.
You know, and you're not going to know there's a problem until, you know, people start getting sick and you know, by then isn't it too late to do that?
I think I mentioned this before in the Kalamazoo example. They ignored the alarm.
Yeah.
So 17 hours later, there's a disaster.
We've seen that too. And it's like,
yeah.
Well, you're paying. Hey, what's all this crud in this river?
Yeah. You're paying people $12 an hour. You know, it's like,
well, exactly. And of course they're trying to do this on the quick and cheap as you do try to do any sort of expensive project, try to cut corners where you can. And this is probably something you don't want to cut corners on. But having said that, corners do inevitably get cut. And I don't think it's unreasonable to ask to double check those figures before going forward. But having said that, I presume at some point before the early morning, all these people will be cleared out by scary men with guns, and it'll be back to business as usual.
So this is a kind of wait and see for now. But I'm sure 6 months from now, we'll be talking about it again.
Good chance. So we're going to come back here to Canada now. We did try our best to make this like an all-Canadian topic week, but I mean, the pipeline stuff was interesting. So Eric Grenier, who back to CBC, he writes for the CBC. He had the old 308 blog. But he was looking at the House of Commons and heckling. And if you ever watch Question Period, you can definitely hear the heckling. And as he notes at the beginning of this article, you know, when you're sitting in the press gallery, you have to wear the headphones they give you, like you're on a plane to hear the movie, in order to hear what's going on in Question Period. Because if you're sitting above Question Period, all you hear is... So Eric Grenier does this sort of examination of what Speaker Jeff Reagan's been doing, where he's been calling out the hecklers. And so he did an examination of it. And surprise, surprise, the vast majority of the hecklers are conservative MPs, some of whom you may know, Scott Reed, Ed Fast, Steve Blamey, leadership candidate Michael Chong, who, interestingly enough, once worked on civility in during Question Period policy with former Guelph MP Frank Valeriot. I guess that went to the proverbial outhouse now that Frank is gone.
Scrap paper bin. Right there.
Yeah. Three of them were NDP, two of them were Liberal. I think the most interesting thing, in a disturbing way, I mean, is that all the MPs who seem to be named by Reagan are men, and a third of the time it tends to be a woman that they're heckling. So,
well, interestingly, you mentioned Ed Fast. He was the one that did that sort of pointing fingers, as in guns, at presumably at Nikki Ashton.
Yeah.
Never proven that it was, you know, he meant it to be a gun gesture or something, but you know, was he top of the hot list? I think he's pretty well up there.
He was, three times he and Steve Blamey had been.
Right.
Yeah.
So it seems heckling goes with the territory, but they're trying to quash it a bit. I think that's not to say that it's right, but it seems to be just one of those crass kind of things that works somehow. It's to unnerve and unsettle people. I remember seeing a couple of the rookie MPs. Not this round, but I think it was the one before, maybe NDP, who were sort of getting the rah, 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 and they just kind of went, oh my goodness, what is this place? Now, there was a survey in 2015. I'm not sure how many of the MPs answered. 69% of them believed it was a problem, but 72% of them admitted to doing it.
Yeah.
So it's like this notch above. It's like, it's a problem, but we're going to do it anyway. I don't think it would be tolerated really in a lot of workplaces. Oh, and famously, of course, thinking back, Trudeau, when he was still just, I guess, was still the third party, his famous statement to Peter Kent, you piece of schmit. I won't say the word. Do you remember that outburst, though? It was in his pirate period when he looked like Captain Morgan.
Oh,
yeah. So picture,
so he might have been in a rebel mood.
Picture
yeah.
Trudeau in his sort of Three Musketeer beard. I think he was practicing for a role, maybe not the prime minister's role. I think it was 2011. And at that point, I think it was said that we've reached a new low, that it was the way he said it, this very dramatic way. If you listen to the just, oh, you piece of, you know, it was like, oh, dude, now you're the prime minister. But
to be fair, I've probably said the same thing about Peter Kent and in private.
Probably.
I think that's right. And I think we'll note that the Liberals sort of have brought out this policy of, nobody claps after a Liberal gets up and speaks during Question Period anymore.
Is that to save time or to?
I think it was done after Shovegate. Elbowgate. That's
elbow,
right.
Yeah.
I called it Shovegate for some reason.
Well, it's
it was after Elbowgate.
Pushing and shoving gate.
When Trudeau was
don't
like,
push that gate.
I think maybe things have gone too far, guys. And again, channeling Owen Wilson through Justin Trudeau. Things had gone a bit too far. But I mean, you saw that a lot during the Harper years. Stephen Harper would get up to say something, everyone would applaud, and the Liberals were doing the exact same thing. And I'm glad they cut that out, because I mean, I frankly, I understand it's part of the game, but frankly, it's kind of childish. And you kind of expect the leaders of your country to not be childish. And I mean, this is sort of a benign example, but, you know, Justin Trudeau was in New York at the UN the first couple of days this week. So when Parliament comes back, he comes back on Wednesday. And Rhona Ambrose gets up and goes, I'm glad the Prime Minister's back at this place called Parliament, because I don't know if he's aware that, like, the economy is, like, messed up. So when is the Prime Minister going to realize his plan is failing? And it's just like, how do you expect him to answer that rhetorical question that he's clearly not going to? It's like, oh, you're right. I didn't realize I had failed so badly. And it's just like, it's such a...
That's almost like a heckle as a question.
Yeah, I know.
It's passive-aggressive in some ways.
It's so like, passive-aggressive.
Okay, flunky, you're back from the UN sort of tooting our
horn. And the
horn
way she makes it sound like she was sitting there all summer on Reddit, like looking at the stuff that was going wrong in the country.
She was on Facebook. We all know that. Possibly Twitter.
And
here
you know,
I'm eating a pie somewhere.
And it's just, it seems so silly to me. Rather, you know, I mean, as we talked at the beginning of the show, there are substantive things you need to get out of the Prime Minister. But to open up with, when is he going to realize his plan is a failure? When is he going to realize the politics of failure have failed? Shouldn't he just resign and let Stephen Harper come back?
You flunking flunky. Yeah. Yeah, you're probably not even directly allowed to say that. You could heckle it.
But I
you
mean,
could go, you're a flunky. And
well, somebody was doing that when he gets up. Everyone's going like, shirt off, shirt off. Like, the Prime Minister's not allowed to go to the beach on vacation?
Nah,
Just because most of them wouldn't want to be caught on camera with their shirts off at the beach.
A little bit of jealousy there, I think, going
perhaps.
On. Perhaps. Anyway, but there are other examples, too. You're talking about applause. A good example this week was, I think it was in, you know, there's that members' statements where they can just get up and talk about anything.
Yeah.
And Lisa Raitt was talking about early onset Alzheimer's and her husband. And that's one of those ones where it's unanimous and the whole house is on side and they clap. There's an example of civility because nobody's... Obviously, nobody's going to heckle anything like that. You'd probably go down in flames if you did that.
Oh,
but
sure.
I want to go back in time to like possibly the original heckle in this country ever, and it's fairly famous. Johnny McDonald obviously accused of being a big drunk, and somebody was heckling him and
accused?
Said, "Well, it's you know, it'd be hard ever. There's no selfies of him getting." All twisted up in Kingston, but somebody had heckled that. I was like, you're a drunk. And he said, I get sick not because of the drink, but because I'm forced to listen to the ranting of my honorable opponent. I think there was a time where you had this sort of thrust and whatever back and forth, and heckling kind of evolved from that. So,
yeah.
And we're talking, because you don't see it. You do sort of see it in other countries. You see like full on fist fights in South Korea or whatever. But here it's tradition almost, and you know maybe it's time for the tradition to go into the dust bucket of history. You know,
I think
say, okay, guys, you know, get your job done and shut up.
Yeah, and I think there's kind of a huge chip on the shoulder with some members that they're not sitting on the other side of the house right now, and I understand that. But if it's going to continue, I wish Trudeau would get like some sort of like improv practice where he can like come up with snappy comebacks. So if Rhona Ambrose is going to stand there going, why do you suck? He should have a
no, you suck.
Something a bit better than that. But I wish he would.
You suck, Rhona.
I wish he would go to the David Spade school of like passive aggressive sarcasm and like come back with.
Just say, he just delivers everything like this.
Maybe next summer. Yeah. That is it for this week on Open Source's Guelph. Just a programming note, we will have special guest in studio this time next week. Keithio Mwanza of the Guelph Chamber of Commerce will be here. I will ask you to send us some questions for him about the Guelph business community and promoting business and business opportunities in Guelph. You can do that through our website, opensourcesguelph.com, on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. And you'll be able to hear that episode, plus many more, through the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes. Look for Guelph Politicast and you will find the Open Sources Guelph podcast. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson, all one word, on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog at a spot called The Spanner Book, and there'll be some stuff forthcoming.
Tease.
He always says that, but no, this time it's actually happening. I have to do it as an assignment.
This is it. Yes. I believe Stacy is back this week, so DJ Sounds Good to Me will be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And failing everything else, we will see you back here next week, Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Source with Guelph.